Thanks so much for joining us. This is episode 220 of the 200 Churches Podcast.
I do love being at a church this size because I love seeing the relationships and helping to cultivate those relationships and seeing people connect with one another and hearing how they're sharing their stories, walking alongside one another, and being able to speak into that and shape that. I love that. We are blessed with an amazing group of people who are part of our church. And I look around and I go, how did these people decide to be part of this church? Because they're fantastic people.
Welcome to the 200 Churches Podcast, where every Wednesday we produce a fresh episode of ministry encouragement for pastors of small churches. Now, here are two guys who, like you, serve in the trenches of small church ministry, the fish and chips of ministry podcasts. Jeff and Johnny.
This is the 200 Churches Podcast. My name is Jeff Cady, and I'm here in the opulent and exceedingly luxurious 200 Churches Podcast sound recording studio with my good friend, colleague, partner, ex-fellow student, and current, what are you, Johnny? Co-pastor and friend?
You added too much fluff. Ran all out of steam there. Johnny Craig.
Johnny Craig. Good to see you, Johnny.
Yeah, man.
Johnny, this is a unique recording time for us.
Yeah, we've been doing this a little bit lately at different times.
Yeah, but not on a Friday
night. 9:30 on a Friday night. That's pretty out there for us.
That is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I told you 15 minutes. We're in and out of here, so.
Well, we are committed to the task.
That's right.
Committed to the calling.
I told my wife tonight, I said, I feel like if I quit doing the podcast today, that would be selfish. That's what I said. I feel like it would be selfish to quit doing the podcast.
I could think of another adjective.
Smart?
Exciting? No.
I would improve the podcast exponentially if I quit, but I felt like I would feel selfish because I know that our guests are so helpful to our listeners. And I know that our listeners, we get emails all the time, and this is such an encouraging podcast. And we have guests like today's, John Chandler. And they bring so much excitement and joy to this podcast. So I would feel selfish. So 9:30 on a Friday night, fine. I'll do it for our listeners.
Speaking of John Chandler.
Yeah.
He emailed me.
He said,
would you be on my Sermon Smith podcast?
Yeah.
Right? And so Sermon Smith podcast is talking to pastors about sermons.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, oh, I don't want to do that. To me, that sounded so boring. And
that's
I thought,
funny.
What was boring to me was if I had to do that podcast and
sure.
be the host
yeah.
and just every week talk to different pastors
crank
about preaching.
Crank it out.
Then I listened to one of his episodes.
Yeah.
And throughout the episode, this other pastor is talking about preaching. I got a lot of ideas.
It's good stuff.
I had a lot of thoughts.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, I'm going to be on this podcast because I want him to be on our podcast. And that's what we've done. But
one
then,
good turn deserves another.
Yeah, but then I pulled a little bait and switch on him. I told him I'd be on the podcast, and then you and I both showed up.
That's right. Well,
we're
a package deal.
It's a package deal.
That's right.
So we both got to be on the Sermon Smith podcast.
I think it was good. He even said that was the first conversation he'd had with such a collaborative team like you and I are.
Right.
So I think it probably was better. It threw him for a loop a little bit, but I think it was better than either one of us by ourselves. We're better together, Jeff.
It was fun though. Wasn't it fun doing a podcast? Honestly, that day we did them back to back.
We should be on more podcasts.
Well, not just ours. We were on his podcast. I felt like I was my mother in the 1950s at the switchboard. She was an operator, right, for the telephone company in the 1950s.
That's
and
amazing.
She'd pull out a quarter inch cord out of here and pull this one out. And, you know, this is the operator, long distance,
please.
You had
to turn everything around to go from his to ours.
Yeah, so we had to switch it all around, and then we were now the host, and he was the guest.
Yeah.
Very interesting stuff coming up from John Chandler, just about pastoral ministry, about small church ministry, about bivocational ministry.
Church planning. This guy does everything. It was really a good episode.
Balancing family and ministry.
Yeah, yeah. It hits
really
a lot
good.
Of bases, and he's got a lot of good stuff to say. So
He knows some friends of ours.
Fitch and Holzclaw. He's about to have Ken Shigematsu on his podcast.
Shigematsu.
He's hitting up that CMH. You know what
I'm saying? That's right.
That's funny.
Now, he found us when he was looking up Ken Shigematsu.
That was, hey, you got to land a whale once in a while. Yep. You know what I'm saying?
And he found us. So it was really fun.
Yeah.
This is a fun episode. John's a very interesting character, and so we're going to get right into it. John, so good to have you on the podcast today. Welcome to 200 Churches.
Thanks. Good to be here. Be on somebody else's turf.
How's it feel to be on the other side of the microphone, John?
I mean, technically, I'm still on the same side of the microphone I'm already on. I'm on the other side of the questions.
Oh, there you go.
Fun. Yeah, it's a fun change. I've done this a couple times. It was most traumatic when I was on the other side of my own podcast. I had a friend interview me. I'm a preacher, right? So preachers we're all pretty comfortable talking. You have figured out the formula for the easiest podcast in the world, which I share with you, which is ask preachers questions. And then you don't have to do much.
There you go. Well, hey, we just got finished with you, John, doing an episode of the Sermon Smith podcast. Sermon Smith, one word, right? Sermon Smith.
One word.
Like a blacksmith, but with sermons.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I have to be fair. You contacted us, and I had not been connected with your podcast yet, so I've only listened to one episode so far.
What'd you listen to?
Can't remember the name of the guy, but it was a shorter one. It was only like 30-something minutes.
Oh, wow.
A lot of them are longer.
Yeah.
Well, I liked it so much. I liked your style so much that I replied back to you right away that I want you to be on our podcast. Let's promote that, the Sermon Smith podcast.
Yeah.
It's not a podcast that I would want to do. And so therefore, I've seen a podcast that I think to myself, okay, I would not want to do that podcast, so I think I don't want to listen to it. But the truth is, it's a podcast about preaching sermons and how people put together sermons, and everybody's different. And just the one I listened to, it caused so many ideas to pop in my head. I thought, oh my goodness, I got to listen to this every week. So I subscribed, and I've got you in the queue now, and so I'm going to start listening and on drives and stuff, catch up. But
yeah.
I would recommend that to you, our listeners, to listen to Sermon Smith podcast.
Well, and good news for you. You don't have to listen every week because I only do it every other week.
Every other week.
Man, that means you've been going you have 80-some episodes. You've been going almost as long as us.
Yeah, I guess late 2013.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's crazy. Good for you, John.
And has your preaching been impacted by 80-something episodes talking about preaching?
I would say it has. I mean, it's definitely helped me as I ask people questions and hear what they do. On the one hand, I've heard people describe what they do, and I think, oh, golly, I could never do it that way. And so it's helped me build my own confidence for knowing that the way I do my sermon prep might be good for me. But I've also heard things from some people who I can tell that the way that they approach it, maybe their personality or the format of their church even might be similar enough to ours that I would say, oh, yeah, there's something here that I could pick up. So, yeah, it's definitely had an impact on it. I started the podcast in a season where we were just starting. I was a church planter, but we'd been kind of cultivating out of a home for several years, and I'd been doing some guest preaching, but I started the podcast right about the time we started our weekly liturgy, and I was starting to preach more regularly for the first time in several years. So even as I was rediscovering the sermon prep rhythms, I was talking to other people about theirs.
I listened to one of your episodes I told you earlier with Tara Beth, and I can't remember her last name to save my life.
Tara Beth Leach.
Leach, yeah. Perfect. Okay, and she talked about making a discipline of reading the sports page every morning for a year. Because she's like, there are some people in my church who connect with the world through sports. And if I don't know anything about sports, then where am I going to be? And you guys also talked about how when you're writing a sermon, she said, maybe when I'm writing a sermon, I'm thinking of illustrations that might make more impact or make more sense to some of my female listeners, right? And I thought that was ironic because as a man, I've never thought about my sermons not impacting a female listener because maybe my illustrations don't connect. And I thought, well, that's convicting.
What a patriarchal worldview you have.
I know,
John.
It is, exactly. But that's why I think that's what's really great about your podcast. And I would encourage any of our pastors who are interested in becoming better preachers, AKA all of our pastors who listen, to go check out the Sermon Smith because, just that one episode, she had such great insight for me. And if you really think about these things, I think it can make a big difference on your preaching. So that's very cool. Where are you out of, John? Where do you, said you started a church about 3-4 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah. So I'm in Austin, Texas. Our church is called Austin. Austin Mustard Seed.
Austin's kind of like the new Nashville for Christians, isn't it? I mean, what's going on down there? Is it like everybody has to go to Austin and plant a church now? What's up?
Golly, I don't know that I thought about it as the new Nashville for Christians. So there's definitely been, we moved here about 7 or 8 years ago, and there were a wave of church planters that came then. And then there's been another wave recently, but there's been a lot of church plants that have come and gone, because Austin's not like Nashville or a lot of places where you can just have some degree of personality or be a known figure in the church and show up and boom, you got a church, you know. Because there's a definite level of suspicion. There's so many new people here in Austin, and it's a friendly place, but there's also a little bit of a suspicion towards what is new. Like one of my first unchurched friends when I came here, he's like, why do you want to start a church? There's so many of them. And I know that happens everywhere, but that also seems to reflect a lot of what I see. So Austin's an interesting place because on the one hand, it is very Texas, and it's not uncommon or unsafe even to ask somebody like what's their church background or are they part of a church?
Sure.
It's still enough just being in Texas. It's still enough of a known thing that I have very few friends who, you know, have never really gone to church here, but I have a lot of friends who checked out a church along the way. So it's got this progressive, it's cute that you still believe that kind of vibe to it.
Gotcha.
So it is unchurched, but it's also got some sense of this Christendom culture going
on. So it's like if you smashed Portland and Atlanta together, maybe you'd get an Austin. Is that?
Maybe so. Yeah.
So John, tell us a little bit about your family. Tell us where you went to school.
Sure. I'm married, so that's part of my family. My wife's name is Sherry. We've been married for a little over, oh my goodness, I better do this math real quick. We've been married for about 22 and a half years.
Okay.
We have a daughter who recently turned 15, a daughter who is 11, and then a son who's 9, who's very nurtured. Very, very nurtured. And I went to undergrad. I went to a Bible college for undergrad. I went to a place, at the time it was called Pacific Christian College, and now it's called Hope International University. It is the background I grew up in, the tradition I grew up in, was the Christian churches, which are somewhat connected to the Churches of Christ. They call themselves the Restoration Movement. And then for grad school, after doing ministry for about 12 years, we moved to Seattle, and I helped start a church up there and went to Mars Hill Grad School, which has also changed its name. So I basically have diplomas that have names of schools that no longer exist. But Mars Hill Grad School, which is now called Seattle School of, I can never remember if they say psychology and theology or theology and psychology.
Ah, okay. Yeah, being in Seattle, they probably felt maybe it was time for a name change.
Yeah, I mean, both Mars Hills started about the same time. I don't know how far along they each were before they discovered each other. They were already, you know, I was there, I guess I graduated almost 10 years ago, and they were already deliberating then about there's enough difference between who we are and there's enough knowledge, you know, of the two of us that it'd be helpful to make a distinction there.
Yeah. But you went from Pacific Northwest to Austin. That's pretty cool, man. You've been everywhere.
And you're a church planter. Do you see yourself as a church planter?
Not originally. I remember, so I did youth ministry for 12 years. I remember going on a mission trip probably about 8 years into that with some other pastors. We went to India and we were doing a youth conference there. And two of the guys on this trip, there's only like 3 people who listen to this podcast, right? So they would never hear this and be offended by one of them.
Just
reassure me. Just reassure me.
Yeah, we're all friendly. No,
there were two guys on that trip who, one of them was a church planter and one of them was about to plant a church. And they were just bosom buddies the whole time, you know, just off. And we're like, oh, they're talking church planting again. But I even remember at the time thinking, those guys, I say that in jest, but also thinking, man, that's out there that they can just, because I was in a mega church at the time. I mean, it was stable and secure, and just thinking, man, what are these guys doing? That's ambitious and crazy. And church planting, you know, that was, I mean, I guess that was 15 years ago. That's when a lot of the church planting that's happening now was really just starting to take hold, I suppose. But along the way, you know, a few years after that, it just started to be something I was noticing. And then within the course of like 1 week, my wife, a good friend who was just another peer in ministry at another church, the former senior pastor of our church that I was at the time, and a good friend that I worked with at that church, all 4 of them in the course of a week said something to me about, have you ever thought about church planting? Those weren't coordinated, you know, in any way.
Yeah.
And that kind of got my attention. as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And that's when you planted up in the Seattle area?
That was when I started really grappling and thinking about the idea of I should do this. And as we were processing what that would look like, we had this opportunity to join this. One of those friends had actually, he was preparing to move to Seattle and start a church. So we went up there and joined them with the intent of being there for 3 years and then learning from all the mistakes we made together there and then being sent out to start another church. And at the time, we didn't know if we would stay in Seattle or go somewhere else. Obviously, yeah. we ended up in Austin. My wife likes sunshine, and Seattle does not like sunshine.
No, that's
really funny. So at what point does a church plant become a church? When do you stop being a church planter and become a pastor? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the dividing line here?
I don't know the answer to that question. I would say that we are a church. And I say that because, I mean, some people would say, well, when you start your weekend gathering is when you're officially a church plant. I felt like we were a church plant when we first moved here and had 4 people meeting in our house. To me, that was the church starting to form. I would say we became a church really in the last few months, late last year in the fall. We formed our own leadership team. We have 2 men and 2 women who are part of our leadership team and kind of walk alongside us, essentially serve as an elder board. And we officially went off the outside support. We partnered with some Baptist organizations, and that all dwindled. So we are officially a self-supporting church, both in terms of finances and in terms of struggling at times, but self-supporting in terms of finances and our own internal leadership. So I think we're there. I think we're a church.
Hey,
it still feels like a church, though, right? I mean, it's been 3 years.
You said 3 years. When did the church plant start?
So we moved here in the fall of 2008. And the intent that we had when we moved here was we wanted to operate more like missionaries. Again, because it felt like the people who were going to go to a new church in Austin just because they got a postcard in the mail, they'd already found those churches. Like a few years before us, John Burke had planted Gateway, Austin Stone had started. And we just felt like we had a heart to live more like missionaries and just know people. And so I started bivocationally. I'm a web developer and podcaster. I'm a web developer as well and have done that part-time since we got here. We started meeting in our home that fall. We literally had a grad student who had been part of our student ministry before and one other couple who moved to Austin at the same time from a friend's church. But we stumbled through that. Like our intent and our hope was that we would kind of multiply out of that, you know, to really focus on the relationships of more like a missional community / small group / house church. We really wanted to get to a point where we would multiply that, get to a space where after we had multiple of those going, we would have some sort of weekend gathering that we would start up. And we never got there. I think part of it's my personality is not that same kind of rah-rah gathering kind of personality who everybody wants to hang out with. That's part of it. It comes out that way more when I'm hiding behind a microphone, right?
Sure.
So there was that. Part of it was just it was the kind of people that we connected with. There was a lot of coming and going. So ultimately, after several years of that and peaks and valleys, never moving beyond the size of our house, I was starting to preach at a friend's church here in Austin, some friends called Vox Vignette, and they were amazingly generous and started letting me preach like every month and a half. And they just said, why don't we just help you get going? And, you know, and anytime I was there, I could talk about, there was one couple that they asked me not to recruit. And other than that, they said, you know, if you want to invite people to come and be a part of this. So I did that. You know, we had that and we were talking about that with their people for about a year as I was preaching there, you know, every 6 to 8 weeks probably. And then we picked a Sunday in October and we rented out a community center and said, hey, here's when we're starting. I'm kind of flying past this a little faster than it happened,
but generally speaking,
we were off and running, you know, starting that Sunday in October with a weekly gathering and then have tried to cultivate it from there.
October of what year?
October of 2013.
So that is about the time that you started the Sermon Smith podcast.
Yeah. It was a few months old at that point.
Wow. So how was that connected? How was starting that podcast connected to your ministry setting and situation?
I have always deeply loved the act of preaching, you know, just the process of forming some stream of thought that you're going to present to people and hope to move them towards something out of that. I've just always loved that. And alongside that, I've always been really fascinated with what is creativity? Like, how do people make things? I've just always been curious about that. I love reading books about writers and how they do writing. I love watching shows like Chef's Table on Netflix, where people talk about how they're coming up with these recipes that they're making. Yeah. I've just always been curious about that. And so, you know, I went through that season where I was mostly more doing just smaller stuff in our home that was more dialogue based. And then as I started preaching at my friend's church again, you know, I'd been on the teaching team at our church before or preached regularly in the church plant, but I went through a season where I wasn't preaching as much. And as I started doing it at my friend's church again at Vox Vignette, it kind of rekindled that. And I found myself just asking so many of my friends when I was around them, tell me about how you put sermons together. Because it was a sweet spot of this craft of the sermon as this theological act and also this act of creative work that you're putting all of these thoughts and ideas together into one whole. And so it really formed out of me realizing I like to ask all of my preaching friends this question. This should be a podcast. You know, this, yeah. I don't know if anybody will listen, but I know that I enjoy talking about it. And so I might as well start recording it and do a podcast. So it's kind of, I can't say it was intentional that I was doing it about the same time as we were starting our church. I think I had the space and the mental energy at that point to get it going about the same time. And there it was.
Yeah. I think something about starting something like jumping into a fresh adventure starts to get all the juices flowing. You know, this is a hard question, John. Okay, so you can punt if you want to. What are the biggest things you think you've learned about preaching doing your podcast? We don't talk about preaching much on this podcast because we figure everybody's got a different style. We don't try, you know, everybody's coming from a different denomination. We got people from the spectrum of types of church backgrounds. Some people who listen probably don't have but 10 minutes of freestyle and homily time in their service anyway. You know, everything is pretty buttoned down. So we don't talk about it much, but there's a lot of pastors who might be interested in this question. What do you think maybe top two, three biggest themes, biggest lessons you've learned about preaching and sermon prep from your podcast?
And you can take it from any recent episodes, John, even maybe wisdom you've heard from episodes that haven't even come out yet, you know.
Yeah, one that you just have sitting around.
Yeah. I'm going to punt on responding to what Jeff said. I won't punt
that's
on the
wise.
Question.
That's wise.
There you go.
There's probably a couple that stand out to me. One of them I can point to a specific episode. One of them I can't. But the first one is, and I've honestly given this answer probably on multiple podcasts where a couple of other people have asked me to be on their podcast. But I interviewed a guy named Wade Hodges, who's up in Dallas, Church of Christ. This Church of Christ guy is literally, I think, their only job is to preach. One of them told me as much. But he's like as much of a pro as you can be. He's just smooth and all that. But he basically described how he works on 4 sermons at a time. And on Monday, he's doing, I don't remember the order, but somehow I think it's either on Monday he's working on 4 weeks out, and on Tuesday he's working on 3 weeks out, you know, and I do not do that. I don't do anything close to that, but it was really helpful to me. And then the other thing he said about this that was reflected actually in the conversations in a recent interview I did that has not yet been published with you two. But one of the things that he talked about is when he is working on 4 sermons at a time, one of the things that he realizes is, you know, he might be working on a piece for one sermon and go, this actually is going to work better the following week. And so he can move things around like that and have the foresight to see that. I think about that one a lot. I certainly don't have the rigidity of that structure, but I certainly have learned that it's helpful to be able to at least be kind of incubating a couple at a time and know that, especially if I'm doing a series that's focused on some particular thing that we're grappling with in the life of our church, to know that I might just have one big file that has all of these pieces for those sermons and those things get moved around. That one was really helpful to me and it stands out. Probably the thing that's been most helpful to me that I can point to a couple of episodes where it's been referenced, but I've kind of taken a little bit on my own too, is I've developed a structure that almost all of my sermons fit into. And because I'm bivocational, you know, I do believe that you have to do the work. You have to put in the time to put a sermon together, whatever that might look like. It looks different for all of us. But somewhere along the way, I can tell you part of where this came up was I was having lunch with my friend from Vox Vignette, he and the other pastors at their church. And he said to me, do you do any kind of like format when you preach? And I said, do you have a structure? I'm like, no. And then he goes, well, I mean, I wondered because it kind of seems like you do this and then you do this and then you do this and then you do this. this, and basically described to me like what all of my sermons had followed, you know, at his church. That just left me thinking. Over time, I have started to realize that there is this typical chain of thought that I like to move through when I put my sermons together. One of the people who first like exposed the benefit of this to me was way, way back. One of my first interviews, and I was already familiar with this because he's a friend, but I interviewed Sid Holsclaw, who we already...
Is that Jeff's wife?
You know, the three of us have already determined that we have mutual friends in Jeff Fitch and Sid Holsclaw, or Jeff Holsclaw. But they at their church at Life on the Vine, they've had a sermon structure that they use. That's how they teach other people to preach, is they invite them into that structure. And so along the way, I don't follow the same structure as them. I think it's actually kind of similar, but getting to a place where I just know that I'm going to have this structure to my sermon each week has really helped me streamline my sermon prep. And I even hate to say the word streamline, and I hate to say the word make it more efficient. But it's helped me settle in, maybe that's safer to say, settle into my rhythm, because I know that as I'm doing my prep, these are the pieces that of what I want to accomplish. And then what's really been helpful for me, though, even afterwards, is I always feel like I'm accomplishing what I want to accomplish in the sermon. After the fact, I might realize I wish I would have done this differently or that differently. But I always know that the goal of what I want to accomplish in each sermon was accomplished, because I've got this structure, this format that I literally drop the pieces into as I have all of these different ideas. You know, it comes time to put the sermon together, I can put them into this format and know that I'm going to move through and accomplish what I want to accomplish. So that's come out of several. Probably halfway through my interviews, I started asking people, I think just because I was wrestling with this myself, but I started asking people, like, how does your sermon come together? You know, what do you have a format that you follow? Because I was kicking that around myself, and it's been helpful for me to get to that point.
You just pulled an Andy Stanley on us, and you have created a question.
I've been confused with him so many times.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, okay. You've created a question now with your answer that is begging to be answered. The rhetorical device you've used is incredible, John. I would love to come sit under your tutelage, because you certainly have dangled a carrot in a way that I have never been capable of dangling a carrot.
Well, John is a rhetorician.
This is incredible what you've done. My mouth is watering, and I need to know.
Tell me. I can't wait to hear it now.
I need to know. What is the form? What is the format that you use?
I suppose I did do that. It
really
was not my intent, because to me it's more the value of having that, but I'd be glad to go through it.
It
was just knowing that I have the value of having that. It just gives me a place to rest into my sermon prep each week.
But, before you share it, John, it really what I heard from you saying is you don't have to reinvent the wheel every week, and it gives you confidence to know that you're going to end up where you want to end up because you've got a proven process. So go ahead and share.
Was I the only one who was like, "Tell me then, tell me, John, tell me what it is? If it's this great, tell me. You got to tell me.
You're smart, Johnny. You're perceptive.
You got to tell me what it is. Go ahead, John.
Yeah. I mean, that's true though, Jeff. I have a template. You know that every time I open to start a new sermon, I see the four pieces in there, and I know that I'm just going to start dragging these pieces into place. So the way it works is, I'll just tell them to you up front, and then I'll circle back to them. But I'll tell you the best part about it actually is, so I'm just going to tease this, and then if I forget, you circle back and remind me of this. The best part is we really work hard to try to invite other people to preach in our church, and it's been really helpful for them. So what I use is I start with attention, and then I move into the text, and then I have a piece I call the calling, and then I end with the imagination. So the tension is I always want to try to create some tension that is going to give people some need, desire to listen. Why is what we're about to talk about? Why does it matter? And so sometimes that tension might be directly related to where that text is going. Sometimes it might be a little bit periphery to it. The one that stands out to me, and this was last, I think this would have been, this would have been during the Easter season. During Lent, Easter, Advent, we follow the lectionary. So this was during the Easter season last year, and the text was Revelation 5, Jesus is on the throne. And so my tension that week was, I just put up a picture of the five or six presidential candidates were still in it at that time. Right.
Oh,
that
boy.
That was an immediate tension. Right. Like, I got everybody's attention just by doing that. That was obviously zeitgeist at the time. but, you know, ultimately where I was going with that sermon was, you know, ultimately, regardless of what happens here, we serve and follow a greater power. Jesus is on the throne. And Revelation is not just talking about Jesus is on the throne later. Jesus is on the throne now. And so that I try to do that with the tent. That one just stands out to me because I remember how palpable it felt room the day that I did it. That's what I try to accomplish with the tension. I will try to move the tension into the text, which is really just the text that we will be studying for that day. I'll spend time working through explaining the text, which takes me, and I'll backtrack to that in a minute, that takes me to the calling. And the calling is really brief, but the simplest way I can describe the calling is, if the church is the ecclesia, the people called out, then the calling is, what are we being called toward? And so I try to format every sermon with some kind of idea of, there is a calling in this text for who we are as a people. In the same way that this text was moving people from one place to another when it was written, or for who it was written about, there is some calling that continues to happen for us. And so almost all of my sermons, I will say, and it's really, you could call it a thesis statement. I just think it's more pointed because it's about a calling, but I'll say we are called then to, or our calling. And that's helpful for me because it's a collective movement. Like this is for us as a church, just not the three steps that all of you as individuals are supposed to go and do this week. But this is this calling, this collaborative thing of who we are as a people. And having that is helpful then because I'm a nerd. And on a prior interview with somebody I interviewed on Sermon Smith about an hour ago, you know, one of the guys talked about
those were smart people.
One of the guys talked about how his wife, you know, makes him, as he's talking about a sermon, say, well, why is this going to matter to me? And how he has to rewrite sermons sometimes. And that's been helpful for me because when I'm unloading the text, man, I want to talk about every little thing. I want to talk about what I got out of this word study. And most people, they might not care at worst. They can't digest it at best. And so knowing what that calling is going to be helps me at least know what parts of the text are going to be most relevant to what we're trying to illuminate out of the text that day to move them towards that calling. And then finally, then the imagination. The imagination is my much happier version of the word application. But the imagination, it might be individual based. I try not to just leave it with here's three steps. But at the same time, I do want to, you know, give us some sort of understanding of, if we've just talked about what is oftentimes this big calling, then the imagination is, what might it look like for us to live in light of that this week? And that I'm still most challenged by that part, to give people an idea of what is it. If we are a people who have this calling, this is how it might play out in our relationships with one another or in how you approach your job this week. So that's really been helpful for me because I collect ideas all week long for my sermon. And when I sit down, be it on Thursday or be it on Saturday, to start to pull all of them together, I use mind mapping software and I can just start dragging all of these pieces into where I think they fit within those four movements, or the ones that don't fit. I have the cutting room floor piece and they just, you know, end up down there. So it's just really helped streamline the process. I know that if I do the work each week of starting out, spending time with the text to determine what that calling is going to be, you know, some commentary study, some word study, just some reflective reading. And I get that. And then ideas will come to me throughout the rest of the week that I can just drop them. A few weeks, honestly, when it's going well, then I can just start to drop all those pieces in place and the sermon will start to emerge out of that.
So you mentioned mind mapping software. What's it called?
So I say mind mapping. I actually do it a couple different ways. One of them I use an app called Scrivener, which is a Mac app. They actually have it on PC now too. But Scrivener is basically outlining and writing all in one. So sometimes I'll just do it within Scrivener because I can drag all of those pieces. Mm-hmm. But the mind mapping software I especially like to use, and Scrivener will let you actually export your document to a mind map format called OPML. And there's an app called MindNode that I like to use. I love to just sit there with an iPad at a coffee shop and with my fingers just say, oh, here's this idea. Let's drag it into the imagination category, or let's drag this. This is going to go under text. And so I'll just drag the pieces around that way.
So that's N as in Nancy, N-O-D-E, mind node?
Yep, all one word.
You know, as you talked, I thought, I might do this too.
And as
That's really kind of funny. Somebody had to illumine for you, John. Maybe you've illumined for me. I see a lot of my own writing.
You're not saying
this.
Might do this like might do it next week. You're saying you already do this too, or
I'm
something
similar.
I'm saying
my
like you have
structure's
kind of format,
fairly
right?
similar to this. Yeah, I mean an opening.
Yeah, I don't think it's rocket science I'm talking about here, right?
Yeah, right, right. But that's interesting. Yeah, I've never thought. If you had said, "Do you have a process? Do you have a way that you organize?" I'd say, "No, man. Every week is new." But no, they pretty much follow that kind of a flow.
So, John, I've got some questions for you. Number one, what size is your church?
There's probably about 100 people who would be like active regular attenders. Okay. That includes baby Amos, who yep. is 6 weeks old. On a typical Sunday, including we have a very young church. We have a lot of small kids. But on a typical Sunday, there's probably about 70 people there, you know, give or take time of year.
Okay, great. Now what that does, it just locates it for our listeners, because a lot of our listeners might be in the 20s, some of them in the 70s, some in the 100s. So that's helpful. So they know where you're coming from, because, you know, us pastors, we've got this weird thing that if we have a church of 70 and somebody in a church of 200 is speaking, somehow we think that they're doing things that we can't do because their church is bigger, right? So So you're giving us all some good ideas here out of a church of 70, because the size of your church is irrelevant. It's that you have a church, a group of people, and that ministry is important, and the kingdom of God is growing in big groups and small groups. And so we're all in this together. What brings you the most energy and encouragement in your ministry right now?
We're still young as a church, so we don't have a whole lot of conflict yet. But the thing that pleases me, a couple things please me. I do love being at a church this size, because I love seeing the relationships and helping to cultivate those relationships and seeing people connect with one another and hearing how they're sharing their stories, walking alongside one another, and being able to speak into that and shape that. I love that. I mean, we are blessed with an amazing group of people who are part of our church. And I look around and I go, how did these people decide to be part of this church? Because they're fantastic people. So certainly that, honestly, I the preaching part is my favorite thing too. Like, that's where I feel like I'm wired, you know, like this is what I'm supposed to do. And I just enjoy doing that a great deal. And then having follow-up conversations with people, because this happens rarely, right? This happens. It's not like half the congregation is waiting in line to follow up with their deep thoughts that they were chasing during the sermon. Wouldn't that be fantastic? But
that would be.
No, but you know, I love it from time to time when somebody, you know, comes back a little bit later and says, man, you said this and I was thinking about this, or those are the things that keep me going. And again, we basically split one full-time salary among three people. So I work 3 days a week for the church and do two days a week of web development. On the one hand, I don't know if that means I get to do more of the things that I am most passionate about doing because the other things just can't get done because we don't have the man hours to do them, or if that means I get diluted even more. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah, good. I was going to ask you about the bivocational piece.
That's a church David Fitch would be proud of.
Yeah.
Yes, he would.
For real. Yeah, you started slow, started with your house, expanded to the weekend gathering, you know what I mean? But having three part-time on staff, I think, you've got it going on over there.
As long as you promise not to let David listen to this, I would say he probably had some influence on that. But I don't want him to in any way.
Look, we don't need David getting a bigger head than he's already got.
Oh, my goodness,
no. You know what I mean? That guy.
We try to let air out of his head.
I have nothing to learn from that guy.
80% ego. That's David Fitch.
So he's been on our podcast at least two or three times, so you could search for him and hear how we mock him when we bring him on the podcast, right? So tell me something. You've got two jobs, and so there's a lot to do. How do you prioritize family time? You've got three kids, right? Age what? 8 to 15, somewhere around there. How do you prioritize
9 to 15,
family time?
That's a loaded question right now. We're just coming out of a really intense season of life, to be honest.
It's a loaded question for a lot of our listeners too, so that's not
right,
bad.
Right, right, right. Typically, I'm pretty good about having a schedule. I'm pretty focused on, I work Monday morning, Tuesday all day, Wednesday morning, Thursday morning on church stuff, and I do website stuff the rest of the time. I take Friday off and Saturdays. Saturday is a church day, but it's kind of flexes. You know, sometimes it's part of the day, sometimes not. But I typically, I have about, on average, about one evening a week, which is church-related things. And that's it. So I make sure I have evenings that are mostly family time. And Fridays for us, like, we call it our family Sabbath. Sabbath is one of, we have what we call our rhythms and practices in our church. And Sabbath is one of those that we invite everybody to consider what it would look like. And so we consider ours a family Sabbath, and we try really hard to make sure that Friday is a day where there's no doctor's appointments. We homeschool our kids. I should add that too, because that helps.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, Friday is a day for our family to spend together. We try to not do homeschool stuff on Fridays. We try to not schedule doctor's appointments on Fridays. You know, typically, thankfully, dance classes and, you know, after school events don't happen on Fridays. So, yeah, we kind of prioritize that. We're pretty close family. We spend a lot of time together when we, and I work from home, so I see them bits and pieces throughout the day too.
Well, you'll enjoy your conversation with Ken Shigematsu. He'll think you're lights out for that practice. That'll be cool.
That's ideal.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Well, John, I think we have appreciated having you on. I mean, I know I have your insights into preaching, and I would tell all of our listeners, go check out the Sermon Smith podcast if you don't already. John, your podcast probably already bigger than ours, so we're throwing you crumbs here, and you're going to throw us a whole loaf of bread. Yeah. We enjoyed being interviewed on yours, and we've really enjoyed having you on ours, so thanks so much for hanging out with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad we were able to do this little collaboration.
Jeff, before we kicked it to that interview, I said we should be on more podcasts. We should be interviewed on more podcasts. We got to leverage our community here. Everybody listening, you got to tweet at Tom Rainer. Oh, my goodness. We should be on Rainer's podcast. Come on now.
Well,
you feel so awkward now. If you could see Jeff's face, I'm telling everybody, tweet at Tom Rainer. Have the 200 Churches guys on your podcast. Come on now.
No.
His podcast is pretty boring. It's him and Jonathan. They're just yik-yakking.
No, they have some guests sometimes.
We could bring a lot of life, but we could bring a lot of value to that. At Tom Rainer. 200 Churches, guys.
I agree with that. I agree with everything.
We don't take any, you know, we're givers. Now we're going to take a little bit.
I agree with everything you said. I've got two thoughts. Number one is Tom Rainer will be on our podcast later on this calendar year.
He could have us first.
And number two, Jonathan and Tom have really upped their chemistry game.
Okay.
From the early days of the podcast, those two guys, they joke around. They rib each other, and they've actually developed quite the relationship.
Well, that's good.
On air.
That's
now,
good.
Maybe they already had it, right, off air. But when they're recording, I'm actually laughing because it reminds me of like a parallel universe of you and I. Where the guy's name isn't Johnny but Jonathan.
Yes.
Right?
A little more,
Yeah. And Tom talks about his adult sons.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's funny.
So it's, it is funny.
At Tom Rainer. You should have the 200 Churches guys on your podcast.
At Tom Rainer.
I'll be a little bit self-promotional, no problem.
And do the at Jeff Cady and at Johnny, what is it? Johnny underline Craig?
Don't do that. Just do the 200 Churches.
Okay. So, hey, lots of fun with John. I am positive that you as a listener received some thoughts about preaching from his contribution in this episode. So take it and run with it.
He talked about that four-part outline.
Yeah.
Tension,
right.
Text, right? The calling, and then the imagination. That's really good. And like he said, you don't have to use his four. He's not Andy Stanley. He's not going to tell you that you have to do a me, we,
right.
God, you, we.
Right? Right.
He says, but build your own that you're comfortable with and work yourself through it week after week. I think that's a good idea. You could throw a change up once in a while. You know, I was at a church recently, and the pastor, it was as though she was telling a story. And it was like first person telling a story, and they were weaving the Bible in with it. And it was very good, very beautiful, not like any kind of sermon I'd ever seen. So still throw a change up. But that's a good idea, having just like a normal progression that you work through. So,
and that last word, imagination, makes me think, if you've been preaching for at least a year, what would it look like if you tried to reimagine your preaching? What would it look like? What would it look like to keep the best parts of your current preaching, keep your strengths and try to make them better, and then cast out the weakest parts and maybe bring in some experiments, you know, something else. But to reimagine your preaching, and who listens to your preaching every Sunday that you trust that you could take out to lunch and say, maybe two people. I think two people would be good.
Yeah.
And say, hey, I want to reimagine my preaching.
Yeah.
What are my strongest points in my preaching? And what are some things that I could maybe just stop doing or make a little better?
That's really good.
Yeah, that's really good, but who's going to do it, man?
Hey, I have
put your bulletproof vest on.
I've had some help with my preaching from a good friend who comes to our church, and he's been invaluable to me. So I think that's a good idea and a point well taken for anybody listening and thinking about their own preaching. Also, check out the Sermon Smith podcast. John Chandler puts that out every other week. It's fantastic.
SermonSmith.com is the website.
Yeah, look it up. And don't forget, at Tom Rainer, you should have those 200 churches, guys.
Well,
I just cracked myself up, Jeff.
He'd be glad for...
I can hear the music behind us already. We're coming to that closing time, and I just know I got to tell everybody.
Hey, Tom would be glad for some suggestions on good podcast fodder.
That's right.
We're nothing if not good fodder for other podcasts.
That's very true.
But, you know, here's the thing, though. If you listen to our podcast with John Chandler on the Sermon Smith podcast, it's a little unfair in that you and I have a relationship that is so hard for pastors to find.
Sure, that's true.
And if you have it, though, then that's great.
Yeah.
But it's kind of unfair because it's hard to find that. But I think to move toward that is and to for that to be a goal, to try to develop that kind of a relationship with somebody, I think is a worthy goal.
Yeah, absolutely. So we appreciate you listening and downloading every week. We appreciate your support and all the friends that you tell about the podcast. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week on the 200 Churches podcast.
We hope you've been encouraged and inspired by this episode of the 200 Churches podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe at 200churches.com and receive the guy's free PDF download called Our 7 Favorite Ministry Resources. You can count on us to be back next Wednesday with another brand new, shiny episode just for you. Until then, may God bless you as you lead and love the people in your 200 Church.
All right, John. Jeff will give you the rundown. I got to go pick up a kid from school, but it's been really great, man.
All right. Sounds good. Look forward to meeting you guys in person soon.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
Okay, so John, just... how many listeners do you have, brother? I'd be interested. I have nobody to compare it to except for stinking Carrie Newhoff, man, and he's off the charts. It's like, you know, it's a losing
profession. Yeah. Typically, I think most of mine, to be honest, I haven't looked in a couple months. I do care, and I do look. I haven't looked in a couple months, but...
In your ministry right now. I clip out the pauses, so nobody will ever know. They'll never know. Man,
okay,
he answered that fast.
I don't think the pause is a bad thing.
Okay. Well, thank you, John, and we'll see you in about a month.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.